This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. A new documentary film on PBS shares a forgotten story of a U.S. Navy project to explore the bottom of the ocean, more specifically, humans living on the bottom of the ocean. A North Carolinian pioneered the Sea Lab project. Dr. George Bond was a physician from Appalachia who fell in love with diving during his time in the Navy. His work led to three different experiments involving living habitats on the bottom of the sea. But after more than 5 years, a deadly tragedy cut the Sea Lab program short. Ben Hallworth is the author of Sea Lab, America's Forgotten Quest to Live and Work on the Ocean Floor. He's also featured heavily in the PBS documentary Sea Lab. It's on American Experience. Ben Hallworth, welcome to the State of Things.
Thank you very much, Frank. Good to be here.
Good to have you. The story of Sea Lab is in itself fascinating. It is well told. But George Bond, I mean, this is this guy from Bat Cave, North Carolina, who is an incredible story all by himself. Let's start with that story. Tell us more.
Well, yeah, he was kind of a country doctor operating out of Bat Cave, which, as some of your listeners may know, is sort of a speck of a town in the Blue Ridge Mountain area, I guess you would call it.
Mm-hmm.
And he had gotten to know the area as a child in summer camp, and once he had gone to medical school, he got the idea that the area could very much use a physician of its own to serve the people living in far-flung shanties around the area, and he took it upon himself to establish a practice there, far from the ocean, and the ocean was far from his thoughts at that point, but he was almost 10 years covering a 500-square-mile area in his Jeep, making house calls and dealing with some rather primitive medical conditions to take care of the people back there, some of whom he had gotten to know growing up when he spent summers in the area.
And he achieved some notoriety for his efforts, right? Medical profession recognized what he was doing.
He did. He was actually the subject of an American Medical Association film. I think there's some nice clips from that in the documentary showing him doing his work. And he established a small hospital in the area, which was the first of its kind, and had some models for bringing more modern healthcare to rural areas in a manner similar to what he was doing around Bat Cave. Now, it's funny to talk about all this because you're thinking, like, well, what the heck does this have to do with
exactly
deep ocean research? Right. We are way off the subject here. But the main point is probably you have a character here, as you can probably tell from what I'm saying, who is a kind of guy who sees a problem and right. Likes to figure out a way to make things happen and solve it. And that it's that personality and that force of personality that he essentially brought to the Navy. And that is really very much why the Sea Lab program got started in the first place.
But one more little adventure and one more little sidelight that I think underscores and highlights the character of George Bond. He does join the Navy, and he's a diver, and he's involved in this human experiment to see how far divers, or whether how deep a submarine can go and still allow divers to escape, right? And he does this. I mean, just describe this experiment, which is completely gonzo, because he and another guy just do this. I mean, with approval, but describe
right. It's a little bit dicey, and not everybody was in favor. But that is classic Dr. Bond. There were some new methods of submarine escape being tried out. This is in the 1950s, and this is essentially, you know, the submarine equivalent of a parachute for someone in a plane. You know, something goes wrong with the sub. How might you get out if you're one of the sailors on board? And one was a method where through a airlock, basically, you could leave the submarine and just make a free swim for the surface. But of course, there were questions about just how deep it was safe to attempt that. And Dr. Bond, in his way, he was by then the head of a medical research laboratory in the Navy that was doing some tests to figure out how this might work. But he reckoned that around 300 feet, you could leave a submarine and make a free swim for the surface and live to tell about it. And in classic Bond fashion, he fairly insisted that he should be among the people to give this a try and just see how it went. So he and one of his acolytes rode a submarine down off the coast of Florida to just over 300 feet and went through the process of leaving the airlock and made a swim for the surface, wearing, you know, not much more than gym shorts and a little life vest.
Pretty incredible.
I think that's...
And it's in the film. This is actually the fact that the footage of this is in the film. And I can attest to the fact that a human being can hold their breath for 53 seconds. I did through the entire footage, but he makes it to the top. So this is our George Bond. And this is the guy who is, in many ways, is the impetus behind the C-Lab program. So tell us more about that connection and what C-Lab was.
Well, if I just can interject for a second, dive to the surface, if he had held his breath for 53 seconds, he would have killed himself and died from an air embolism because of the expanding gas in his lungs. So one of the things they had to learn how to do was blow continuously through the 53 seconds. Right. So if you can imagine exhaling for a full 53 seconds, which is something you can only do when you're leaving a submarine at 300 feet. And that also gets to the one of the many complications involved in taking people deep into the water and under high pressure. And with C-Lab, George Bond was attempting basically to achieve the diving equivalent of breaking the sound barrier. It was very much off the charts of conventional diving methods of the time. This is the late 50s. So you do have scuba by now, and that's solved some of the mobility issues for divers, but it hasn't solved the fundamental problem, which is if you go very deep, you can't stay very long. So what good is it if you're a free-swimming diver? You can go down to a few hundred feet, but then you've got to begin your return to the surface within minutes. And Dr. Bond was thinking, hey, it's, you know, the dawn of the space age. We ought to be able to do better than that. And C-Lab was going to be his answer, his demonstration that some tests he was starting to do in the laboratory could be replicated in the ocean, and you could, in fact, not only dive deeper, but stay much longer, almost indefinitely, at greater depths than ever thought possible.
So tell us about how this came about. He's doing the experiments. He has a theory. And again, we're now convinced that we have a somewhat larger-than-life figure. But he has to talk the Navy into this and tell them why any of this would matter, right?
Yeah, it would. And he sounded a little nuts, frankly, to some of the Navy higher-ups, because for 150 years, the diving tables, as they're called, were pretty well set, that if you go to, say, a depth of 200 feet, you're going to have to begin your ascent within, you know, 20 minutes or a half an hour in order to allow enough time to properly decompress. And I think most people understand the general concept of decompression, which is the gradual rise from a depth after a dive to allow gases to escape so they don't bubble up inside you and cause pain or injury or death.
And this is just, we should maybe spend half a second on this, because the gases in your blood, you have nitrogen and oxygen mainly, and these other gases compress. And that for one of the things they do is saturate the blood, and so this is one problem. But then as they expand, they start to bubble up, and that can be very, very painful and create serious difficulties. So figuring out how to get that to do so slowly so that you don't have all the trouble with quickly expanding gases that had been compressed by the pressure becomes one of his challenges, right?
Right. Yeah, you want to avoid being like a soda can that's shaken up and popped open. That you don't want that kind of expansion of gas happening in your body. And so decompression is a familiar challenge to the diving community, but doing it after a dive of extremely long duration and at great depth is something that seems far-fetched and off the charts, much as flying faster than the speed of sound seemed kind of unreal at some point. And so Dr. Bond is starting to do some tests in his Navy laboratory in New London, Connecticut, at the submarine base there, and eventually gets permission and just enough money to take his experiments live into the ocean, as it were.
And that brings us to C-Lab 1, right?
Yeah, C-Lab 1, which is a pretty low-budget affair, and they are off the coast of Bermuda for this. There's a Navy base there, so that's kind of their base of operations. And Bermuda also gives them some nice, warm, clear conditions, so they don't have to have the added challenge of the elements. They can focus on their diving methods and their equipment and get all that straightened out, which they largely do. And it was a very quiet success, but a significant one, because here for really the first time in human history, you have a bunch of guys living at a depth of around 200 feet, which to that point was a depth you could reach as a diver, but you'd have to leave after, as I said, 20 minutes, half an hour to, it was thought, get back to the surface safely and not kill yourself. Mm-hmm. And here they had, with C-Lab 1, they proved out Dr. Bond's concept, you know, over 10 or 11 days.
Describe the C-Lab for us and what it was and how it worked.
Well, you imagine sort of a railway tank car. You're basically talking about a structure like that, steel, hollow on the inside. The key is that it's pressurized to the same pressure as the water outside so that you can have an open hatch in the floor and the water just stops at the at your hatch doorstep because the pressure is equalized. But the trick was that to keep people alive and healthy in this pressurized atmosphere over some amount of time is what Dr. Bond had been figuring out with his group of scientists and divers in the lab. And then, of course, anything that works in the lab reaches another order of magnitude of complication when you take it out in the real world, especially when the real world is the deep ocean. So that's basically the setup. You have it's a sort of an underwater RV with a hatch in the floor, a little bit of shower, some tables. This was a pretty primitive, low-budget setup with gases piped in from a ship on the surface, really just to demonstrate that the C-Lab concept could be successfully carried out.
Right. So they did this for, 10 or 11 days at a depth of 200 feet, a modest success, pretty good conditions, as you say, fairly warm waters. C-Lab 1, a success. What does the Navy make of this?
Well, people are impressed because there had been a lot of skeptics about what Dr. Bond was doing, and he had to push pretty hard just to get enough money to pull this thing together. The budget was extraordinarily small. I think they had about $35,000 in a few months to piece C-Lab 1 together. And this is a vessel of a kind that no one had ever made before. The Navy had certainly never made one. And so it was definitely done on a shoestring on top of everything else. But it was a success. The four aquanauts, as they like to call them, came back alive and well after a lengthy decompression and after breathing an unusual mixture of gases that included a lot of helium to take the place of nitrogen, because nitrogen gives you sort of a sensation of drunkenness when you breathe it under pressure. This is one of the many physiological issues that arise when you take a human body under pressure. And so all these basics were kind of proven out, and they were embraced. Dr. Bond got, and the project got quite a bit more money, about 10 times as much. I mean, we're still a drop in the bucket, so to say, compared to space program budgets, but much more than they had before. And this gave them a brand new state-of-the-art lab and an opportunity to do a much bigger, bolder project with C-Lab 2.
Bigger, bolder, and colder, right? Talk about what C-Lab 2 is all about.
Yeah, much colder. So with their improved gear, although the gear is still in a kind of prototype phase, in terms of the dive gear and the habitat itself, that is the C-Lab living quarters, they are going to stage this one off the coast of San Diego, California, where they put themselves in water that's maybe in the 40s instead of the 70s and darker and more shifty currents and uneven terrain, and they really up the ante of difficulty with C-Lab 2, much as you would with any project, to see how far you can push the limits. But also, as Dr. Bond said, we're mostly, if we can pursue this concept, we're not always going to be able to work in sort of Caribbean-friendly dive conditions. It's going to be tough. It's going to be cold. That's the way the ocean is. So we got to take that on as part of our project, along with all the complications that come with it, with the gas mixtures and the breathing and the pressure and keeping everybody healthy and the rest of it.
And they did. Let's listen to what some of the aquanauts had to say about C-Lab 2 in the much colder waters. This a clip from the new PBS documentary on American Experience called C-Lab. Let's hear some of the aquanauts and what they had to say about those conditions for C-Lab 2.
It's dark and dingy and cold. And Bond wanted to get a little deeper and live a little rougher.
On a good day, you could probably see about 5 or 6 feet. On a bad day, you couldn't see your hand in front of your face.
If you've got any bit of claustrophobia at all, you're not going to make it. And the cold aggravates the situation even worse, because then you start losing mobility, you start losing thinking ability. The combination of cold and dark is pretty traumatic.
There it is, two of the aquanauts talking about cold, dark conditions on Sea Lab 2. Actually, three, Robert Barth, Bob Bornhold, and Richard Blackburn from the PBS documentary Sea Lab. And I'm talking with author Ben Hellwarth, who has written about Sea Lab in his book Sea Lab, America's Forgotten Quest to Live and Work on the Ocean Floor. And we're talking about it today on The State of Things. So how did Sea Lab 2 go?
Well, it went very well. It was, as I mentioned, a much bigger, bolder operation. They kept the same depth of around 200 feet, since that's what they had been working with before. But as we just mentioned, much more hostile conditions and a lot more people and a lot more projects involved to really further demonstrate the potential that people have to do useful work in the ocean. Perhaps for the Navy and military purposes, but for industry, for science, this was going to be a whole new frontier. If only, as Dr. Bond imagined, we could get to it and stay for a while and really have a presence on the ocean floor as deep as it was possible to have people go. So Sea Lab 2, you have three teams of 10 aquanauts taking turns, spending 2 weeks in this vessel. Before they return to the surface, their decompression time is in the neighborhood of 30 hours to get safely back to the surface. So one consideration that you don't really think of is that although we were mentioning Dr. Bond escaping safely from the submarine, once you have spent a certain amount of time living pressurized in Sea Lab, swimming for the surface would kill you. So surfacing is not an option for these guys. Everything's got to go right on the bottom. There's nowhere else. There's really no safe haven except for Sea Lab itself, and then a couple of emergency pods they have nearby. So
it's fascinating, and it works out. And so now they've got this other. I mean, uncomfortable, but it worked, and things would have gone fine. And Ben, I've only left you a little over a minute for this, but ultimately there was a tragedy that pretty much put an end to the Sea Lab program. Tell us about that.
Well, yes. Unfortunately, after Sea Lab 2, there was Sea Lab 3, and they took the whole operation, a similar type of operation, quite a few aquanauts involved, experiments planned to a depth of 600 feet off the coast of Los Angeles. And it might have been quite a showcase if not for a death that occurred early in the project, right as they were getting started. So there was immediately, it was postponed. There was an investigation. Some of this has gone into the documentary. It's certainly all in my book, and trying to figure out what went wrong. But partly, I think, because the program didn't have a very high national profile at that point, it was kind of allowed to fade away. And from the Navy's perspective, that was just as well, because some of these methods they had learned, they had covert uses in mind for. So the less said about it, right, in some respects, the better.
So there's lots more to tell about this story. Ben Hellwarth has told much of it in his book, Sea Lab, America's Forgotten Quest to Live and Work on the Ocean Floor. Thank you so much for talking with us, Ben.
Well, thank you for your interest. Appreciate it.
And his work is highlighted in a new PBS documentary called Sea Lab. It's on American Experience. It premieres on UNC TV next Tuesday, February 12th. It's at 9 o'clock, and we've got all the information at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we get a preview of the one-man play called The Talk. We'll talk about that on The State of Things. Stay tuned.